ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Another week, another episode of the Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us this week is Daily Maverick journalist Ray Mahlaka. Here's what's coming your way. Something is rotten in the state of Joburg. From libraries to roads and everything in between, we look at the Joburg files. Then, Helen Joseph Hospital Hell.
I really struggle with this particular story because I've been reflecting on it about why has it garnered the kind of attention from the public and the response from the government.
Later, wage negotiation season is officially open. Why public servants are in for an uphill battle. We also discuss the rather bizarre US presidential debate. And a lesson in Zen, how breathing and hamsters can help you chill. But first, on Friday morning, former Minister Pravin Gordhan died in hospital while surrounded by loved ones. His final words, "I have no regrets, no regrets. We have made our contribution." Having been on the front lines in the fight against state capture and corruption in general, Gordhan was known by many as a formidable strategist, activist, and patriot.
Ray, you know you're one of my favorite humans when it comes to the show. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Lazan. Glad to be back as usual. The conversation with you is always engaging, and I leave feeling inspired after every conversation we have.
Lovely. Now, we have a jam-packed show lined up today, but first, I want us to just quickly talk about Pravin Gordhan. On Wednesday, it was announced that the former minister, Pravin Gordhan, had been hospitalized. And the announcement comes after Gordhan had missed a number of events in recent weeks due to ill health. Activists and Gordhan's loved ones then held a candlelight vigil, both in Joburg and Durban. Now, Gordhan has been the target of really vicious online trolls in recent years, particularly for his work as public enterprises minister. But I think we can't ignore the role he played in fighting state capture, really. He was really at the forefront of it. Who can forget the infamous words, connect the dots? So he has really been fighting state capture from the very beginning within SARS and just continuing that fight.
Indeed. And I mean, his track record in civil service has really been good. For the most part, when he was the SARS commissioner, tax revenue collections were quite high and SARS really functioned well. Although I must say I disagreed with him a lot, especially in his previous role as the public enterprises minister and how he managed state-owned enterprises. He often meddled in the operations of state-owned enterprises and really saw the state playing a bigger role in the running of state-owned enterprises. But really, for the most part, I think Gordhan's legacy is a good one, mostly fighting state capture, as he pointed out very well, serving very well as the former finance minister, and him being fired as well too by former President Jacob Zuma. But I think Gordhan is highly respected as someone who, the history books will really paint him in a very good light. When you talk about his legacy and him putting country first above his political affiliations with the ANC.
It's certainly no secret. The city of Johannesburg is on its knees. From the far too regular water and power outages to crumbling roads and gross mismanagement as a whole, how did the most populous city in South Africa reach this level of disrepair?
Let's move our focus to Johannesburg. It's a city that's been in a state of decline for years. Daily Maverick's Ferial Haffagy has been writing a number of really eye-opening articles as part of her Joburg File series. And it shows how the decline of the metro is really beginning to show itself in dramatic ways. Now, first we have the closure of the Johannesburg Library. It's been closed for over 3 years, maybe even 4 years if you take into account lockdown. And this after the city of Joburg launched a multi-million rand refurbishment project. And to date, there's really very little progress on that and very little to show for it. It's such a pity, you know, because libraries, big and small, serve such an important role in educating the people of a country. I remember listening to one of the protesters, I believe he was a professor from Wits, and he said, quote, "There's no democracy without books," unquote, which I think really summarizes the seriousness of this very, very well.
Yeah. You know, Lausanne, this one is very painful for me because I'm a Joburger. Born in Joburg, have lived in Joburg all my life, and I'm very much committed to seeing Joburg work. I mean, you don't have to think deeply about how the city is falling apart. All you have to do is either walk in the city or drive through the city. You will see that traffic lights mostly don't work. There are potholes. Even though the country doesn't face load shedding, there are still reports of power cuts throughout the city. And yes, water is another big crisis as well, too, in the city. So many water cuts and outages are reported on a daily basis. But, you know, the city's failure, I think it's directly related to politics. We've had so many coalitions come in the city. We've had so many mayors come in and go. So not having any political stability will often compromise service delivery. And the new mayor, Dada Morero, when he came in after him being elected, he said quite worrying stuff, something that does not assure anybody who lives in Joburg about the kind of leadership he will bring to the table. When questioned about his plans, about how does he plan to fix the decline of the city, he was just so flippant about it, saying that the decline of a city, it happens everywhere else in the world. Even Cape Town has its own unique challenges. So that doesn't really inspire any confidence at all. But, you know, from libraries to the explosion of Leland Goy Street, that really reflects political instability and political failures that we have endured since 2016.
And also, just in terms of the politics aspect of it, what really annoys me, or actually infuriates me, is that, for instance, in the Joburg Library case, it took immense pressure and months of nonstop protests from activists to get the city to disclose the actual money spent and contracts given, and just detail the plan it had for the library and for refurbishing it. And the same goes for the Joburg Art Gallery. I mean, we did a story back in February 2023 where we detailed the terrible state of the Joburg Art Gallery. And it really showed the level of disrepair, the disregard for these treasured art pieces that are stored there, and they're stored there really, really badly. So that's the thing that really, really gets to me, is that there isn't any sense of urgency, but there's also no sense of transparency in a lot of these instances.
You know, Lausanne, I share your frustration here because there's no sense of accountability as well. And thank goodness for civil society. Time and time again, civil society steps in, amplifying government or state failure across all three levels. If there's no pressure exerted by civil society groups and the public, one wonders whether anything will get done by the government. So I guess the assuring part here is that we do have an active citizenry here that steps in whenever the government does not do its job, but it need not get to that point. We are taxpayers. Everyone pays taxes in South Africa, regardless of whether you are employed or not. Cities need to work for you, and it does not need the intervention by civil society or the public to force the government's hand to do its job, which is very concerning.
Yes, no, definitely. Now, there's a lot to cover in Ferial's The Joburg Files series on the Daily Maverick website. You can read all about it. She also looks at the Leland Goy Street explosion matter and questions how 19 million rands just vanished in that whole project. So definitely go give that a read.
Unacceptable is how Health Minister Aaron Motsoaledi described the situation at Helen Joseph Hospital. This after broadcaster Tom London laid bare the many failings at this vital healthcare facility. Having reported on the dire state of SA's public health system for many years, we are somewhat surprised that government officials are surprised. Because, quite frankly, we told you so.
Let's move our attention to healthcare and the state of public health facilities in South Africa. Last week, social media and various news channels and radio stations were talking about Helen Joseph Hospital in Gauteng. This, of course, after radio broadcaster Tom London published a video from his hospital bed showing the horrific conditions within the hospital. And of course, you know, what Tom London showed wasn't really anything new. It's something that we've seen at many state hospitals and clinics across the country for many, many years. So why do you think this particular incident resonated so strongly with South Africans?
Yeah, you know, Lazan, I really struggle with this particular story because I've been reflecting on it about why has it garnered the kind of attention from the public and the response from the government. I hear now that there's going to be an investigation that's going to be run by the state looking into the affairs of Helen Joseph Hospital. And in reflecting about this matter, I really don't know why this story has garnered the attention that it so well deserves, by the way. Time and time again, journalists, your colleagues at Carte Blanche and my colleagues at Daily Maverick have written extensively about failure at public healthcare facilities. Women giving birth in corridors of public hospitals because there was no hospital bed available. Rotten food being served to patients who are admitted, and many, many, many other failures when it comes to the health sector. Is it because the source who amplified this story is a well-known broadcaster, which sort of gave more credibility to the complaint? I don't know. But we as journalists, as media practitioners, and even the public have time and time and time again reported about the horrific experiences they encounter at our public health facilities. So I really don't know why, or cannot even proffer an answer as to why the nation was up in arms about this particular matter.
I've also been thinking about it because I also struggled at first to really make sense of it and figure out why this particular case. And for me, I think it has to do with how Tom shared his experience, because he was essentially live streaming his experience on social platforms from his hospital bed. And we saw how things just progressively got worse, almost in real time. And I think that perhaps, along with the very emotive conversation around the national health insurance, it kind of resulted in South Africans having a very visceral reaction to it.
You know, Lasagna, onto something here, especially with the NHI. There are a lot of concerns about whether the government can really make NHI work when the current health system is so broken. And I guess all those concerns are now what Tom has brought to our attention, that, you know, maybe the NHI won't be workable unless the government fix whatever system is already in place. But I must say, I have personal experiences with Helen Joseph. I remember about 10 years ago, a family member was admitted in Helen Joseph, and sadly, the family member died. But I remember the compassion with which the nurses at Helen Joseph dealt with my family in announcing my family member's death, and even how the death was processed. So yes, there are failures in our public health care system, but I really want to take a moment and really recognize that there is good also at our public health system. And based on my experiences with Helen Joseph, our family member's death was dealt with the compassion that it deserved.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, there are always exceptional people working within the public sector. And I think, unfortunately, cases like this really overshadows the work being done by those who truly have a passion for people and for assisting people. So let's keep those individuals in mind as well when we do speak about things such as NHI and the public healthcare system.
It's that time of year again. Public servants, their respective unions, and government gather around the negotiation table to agree on the next annual salary increase. But times are tough, and government is already making it clear that it's not going to simply roll over and give in to workers' demands. And according to Ray, those holding the purse strings have a strong case to not give public servants more than the 3% currently on the table.
Speaking of public servants, there's been a debate raging in the last week or so, and it happens every year. I know it's nothing new, but there's been a debate raging around public servants seeking a wage increase. This year, unions are demanding a 12% increase for the 2025 to 2026 period. I know you wrote a pretty hard-hitting opinion piece on this matter, essentially saying that SA's public servants are statistically actually really well paid and that their demands are a little bit over the top sometimes. So take us through some of the numbers, the research that you've done on this, because it's really an eye-opening piece.
It is. I mean, the numbers are quite scary here. You're right. The public servants are demanding a 12% increase in their pay for next year, which, by the way, the government has rejected. It says it cannot afford 12%. Instead, what the government has done is now offer 3% to public servants. But if you look at public service, it's not large. We have about 1.3 million public servants, but public servants are unusually well paid. I mean, teachers alone earn nearly 50% more than in other developed countries. And a shocking figure for me was that the number of public servants who earn over 1 million rand per year has increased by 280% from a decade ago. So there are now nearly 38,000 public servants in national and provincial government level who are earning above 1 million rand per year. So my argument was that if public servants have been remunerated handsomely over the past decade, isn't now time for them to embrace a compromise and take a bit of pain? Because we know that public finances are under pressure at the moment, and the government is not collecting as much tax revenue as it has done previously because the economy is not performing well. People who are in jobs and able to pay income tax, that has shrunk significantly. And many people in the private sector are taking a pay cut, or if they are getting a salary increase, it's only adjusted in line with inflation or even below inflation. So given this new reality, maybe let's have a conversation about, is it time for public servants to take a bit of pain and a compromise in the greater good of the country? I don't know how that question is going to go down, Lazan. I've already received a bit of hate mail. I got an email this week from someone who says public servants really work under difficult conditions and they deserve to be rewarded handsomely. I sympathize with the public servants, but I'm just bringing this up as a debate for now.
And it's a very valid debate because we have seen previous instances where these unions really hold the entire country hostage for weeks or even months on end, demanding these massive wage increases, which just from a budget perspective is impossible. But as you've said, government came back and said, we can give you 3%. I can just imagine how the unions are going to respond to that counteroffer. But of course, we're also heading into what many have called the marathon negotiations, which could last until the end of October, when we will have our midterm budget update from Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana. So yeah, we're in for a lot of drama, I think, in the next couple of weeks as they try and find each other kind of in the middle.
Indeed, and there's going to be a lot of noise going forward. Public servants threatening to down tools and bringing all of public service to a halt. But from what I hear, the government is really not keen on awarding public servants an above inflation increase. In fact, we are now starting to see a government that is pushing back against all the demands that have been raised by trade unions.
From eating people's pets to abortions after birth. As expected, the US presidential debate between former President Donald Trump and current Vice President Kamala Harris was wild. And yet, the battle between the two presidential hopefuls still promises to be uncomfortably close.
Now, let's quickly talk about the Harris-Trump debate that happened last week. Admittedly, I did not wake up at 3 a.m. to watch it live because I kind of expected it to be a mess, mostly for Trump, that is. But What were some of your main takeaways from this highly anticipated debate? Because for quite some time, there was talk about, is he going to debate with her? Is he not? What were some of your key moments that you took from the debate?
Oh, goodness, it was a mess for Trump, as you correctly say, Lazan. But I saw Kamala Harris becoming firm, cool, calm, and collected, and she communicated her vision for America very well. Going into the debate, a lot of people said, we don't know who Kamala Harris is. We don't know what she stands for. We don't know what a Kamala Harris presidency will look like. But I think during the debate, we got an idea of what she plans to do. She centered people. She centered creating jobs. She centered small businesses and recognized that small businesses are the ones that create jobs. She centered on giving tax breaks to small businesses so that they can thrive. She argued passionately about abortion and restoring IVF rights to Americans. So walking out of that debate, I am confident that I know what Kamala Harris stands for. She stands for people's rights and making sure that America works for everybody and not just a select few people. I'm confident now that, and I might live to eat my words. I think she has it in the bag in November.
It's very interesting because afterwards I was like, okay, but let's see how this translates in terms of votes, because that is always the final test. And I think despite the many bizarre claims made by Trump, I'm not even getting into them because they were quite crazy. Yeah. It's really quite strange to see just how close the race between Harris and Trump still is, according to the many polls that have been released after the debate. What I also found very interesting is that only about 4% said the debate changed their minds about who they might vote for. But overall, it seems that Harris is the favorite candidate in many of these swing states, which is really where it all matters. So yeah, either way, come November, it's going to be a very interesting election to follow and see whether sanity prevails in America, really.
I hope it does prevail, Lazan, because at the end of the day, this presidential race comes down to one thing. It is a former prosecutor versus a convicted felon. And Americans should be mindful of the choices that they make going forward, whether they choose to put a former prosecutor in the White House or a convicted felon again.
Wherever you are and whatever you're currently doing, take a quick moment to just breathe. As we careen our way towards the end of 2024, we want to remind you just how important it is to slow down, take a moment to relax, and find your inner zen. And if mindful breathing and meditation isn't your thing, hamsters are here to save the day.
Now, let's wrap things up with a quick visit to the Karoo. And Daily Maverick recently published an extract from the book Karoo Roads 4 in Faraway Places. And I really loved this. It tells the story of Anthony and Margie Osler and the practice of what they called stoop zen, which I just fell in love with, and meditation in the stillness of the Karoo. Now, Anthony is a monk and Margie a yoga instructor, and together they are inviting people to really spend some time with them and nature and reclaim that inner peace so many of us lack in this very busy world. So Ray, I want to know from you, how do you find and sustain that inner peace, especially now as we make our way towards the final bit of 2024?
The short answer, Lazan, is I don't.
Oh dear.
You know, I somehow also, because of the line of work that we both do, Lazan, we kind of also like the thrill and always being on our toes, I think. That kind of fuels us and makes us a bit productive. But I don't know, Lazan. I guess I do my own meditation. I breathe quite a lot. I lie flat on the floor on my back and sort of breathe in and breathe out. Because I think many people don't know how to breathe. We breathe for the sake of getting oxygen into our brain, but it's not something that we think about doing. So I guess to have my kind of place of zen and calmness, I do breathing techniques.
Look, for me, nature plays such an important role for me as well, just in terms of keeping calm, especially around this time of year. It sounds really corny, but I tend to listen to rain sounds on Spotify. It's weird, but it helps really clear my mind and I just feel more grounded, kind of having that sound of rainfall as a daily soundtrack almost. But then I also have a really strange way of relaxing and just stepping away from the craziness of the world. So what I generally do is I watch two things on YouTube and TikTok respectively. The first one being Kitten Academy, which is literally just cats doing their thing. It's a live stream. They play, they sleep. I find it extremely relaxing. And then there's another one called Hamster Gym on TikTok. And it's just a bunch of hamsters running on wheels, getting treats, and just having the time of their lives.
Good listeners, I have a question for you, please. And I'm sure maybe the listeners will also ask this question. But with the rain sounds, I actually find meditation very difficult because I can't quiet down the mind. My mind runs and I think about all the things I didn't do for the rest of the day or things that I have to do. With the rain sounds, do you manage to quiet down the thoughts and the noise in your mind?
It does help a lot because it's kind of like a white noise. And the best way I can describe it is it's almost like, especially when you listen to it with headphones, that's when it works best, is it's almost like it fills your brain and it fills your body. You feel that frequency. And I find it very difficult to think of other things when I have that sound kind of playing. If you look up brown noise, that has a very similar effect for me and just kind of really, it almost feels like it takes up space in your mind in a very physical way. And then it's very difficult for you to actually think of other things. So yeah, give it a try. See if it works for you.
Oh, goodness. On my shopping cart is noise cancelling headphones. Next.
There we go. Well, Ray, this has been a fantastic chat as always. Thank you so much for making time to sit down with me. And I hope you have a wonderful, peaceful week. And I hope the rain sounds work for you too.
Crossing fingers, Lizanne. Thank you so much as always.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.